So let me start with the kind of contract we signed with the potential users of next-generation ferroelectric lasers. First of all, what we promised is a much higher peak brilliance than standard synchrotron radiation, together with the full tunability in the UV X-ray spectral region. And in this respect, what has been already obtained using SASE schemes sounds very promising, the remaining challenge being here a further extension of the spectral region towards a shorter wavelengths. But as you know, it is quite difficult to make a user happy, and so there are several other requirements a future ferroelectric laser is supposed to satisfy. And between them, the most important are the following. The possibility of controlling the pulse duration versus the energy resolution, a full transverse and longitudinal coherence of the radiation pulse, and a high shot-to-shot reproducibility. This means both power and spectral stability, which is crucial for nonlinear and energy-resolved experiments, point source and point instability, especially needed for experiment design, and a low temporal jitter, which is required when, for example, the output FEL pulse has to be synchronized with another light source for pump probe experiments. It is nowadays common opinion that seeded schemes are a way to go, maybe the only way to go, in order to fulfill all these requirements in red. And the aim of my talk is to show that the possibility of meeting these expectations relies on the solution of several technological and physical open issues. Since time is limited, I will concentrate on just few of these challenges, making use for that of examples taken from conceptual design reports of next-generation ferroelectric lasers based on seeded configurations. So after a brief, very brief introduction about the classical seeded schemes, I will start addressing the following question. How close or how far are we from the content of this sentence, which is very often repeated when presenting harmonic generation configurations? That is, a major advantage of the high-gain harmonic generation ferroelectric laser is that the output properties at the harmonic wavelength are a map of the characteristics of the high-quality fundamental seed laser. And this is quoted from the science paper by Li Wai-Yu et al. In 2000. I will show that the validity of this sentence relies on the possibility of fulfilling some basic and more advanced requirements, such as a good control of the longitudinal electron beam phase space and the minimization of the jitter in input parameters and in the seed bunch synchronism at the ondulator entrance. And in particular, I will focus on the expected impact of parameter fluctuations on the quality of the output FEL pulse. So I will go very quick. The standard configuration for seeded harmonic generation, as you know, relies on a multi-stage configuration. In this case, the electron beam coming from the LINAC is synchronized with the seeding signal, which is provided by normally by a laser system at the entrance of the modulator. The laser-electron interaction inside this first ondulator leads to a modulation of the electron's energy. Modulation which is then converted into microbunching when electrons cross the dispersive section. At the exit of the dispersive section, this microbunched electron beam is injected into a second longer ondulator, which is the radiator, tuned at one of the harmonics of the seed wavelength. This plot shows the typical expected evolution of the harmonic peak power along the radiator distance. And one can basically normally recognize two different regimes. A low-gain quadratic regime, which is also called the superradiant regime, and which is indeed a signature of the fact that the electron beam arrives pre-bunched at the entrance of the radiator, and a SASE-like, I would say, exponential regime, which is the later part of the amplification. The typical expected output power using this cascade configuration is of the order of several gigawatts, while the temporal and spectrum profiles keep in memory of the good quality of the initial seeding signal are normally quite clean. An alternative configuration to this cascade approach is based on seeding with high-order harmonics generated in gas. This block diagram shows the expected layout, which is which will be used, which is foreseen for the 4G LS free electron laser. In this case, the seeding laser, a titanium sapphire, which is synchronized with the accelerator radio frequency, is used to generate coherent harmonic radiation after interaction with some target gas. This harmonic radiation is then transported at the entrance of the radiator, where it starts to be amplified due to the interaction of, with the electron beam. This picture shows the energy per pulse and the peak power in a 50 femtosecond pulse as a function of wavelength, as it has been achieved using different target gases. What is important to remark here is that even at quite short wavelengths, about 10 nanometers, the peak power which is produced using this technique is still several orders of magnitudes higher than the short noise power produced by the electrons at the entrance of the radiator. And so this means that this signal is well suited for direct seeding. There is, of course, no time for me to enter into the details of this technique. Brian McNeil will do that in one of the following talks in this session. What is important to remark is that the expected output characteristics of the FEL light using this technique are quite similar to those obtained using Cascade, and that most of the considerations we will develop in the following will hold for both approaches. So let's now start to review quickly the basic requirements a given electron beam has to satisfy in order to be considered a good electron beam for seeded harmonic generation. In the case of an ideal uniform beam characterized by zero energy spread and zero emittance, the linear analysis of the process shows that if the system is tuned on resonance, the power grows exponentially along the undulator coordinate. In this case, the final saturation power is given by the Pierce parameter rho times the power which is contained in the electron beam, and the gain of the amplification process goes like the undulator period divided by the Pierce parameter. Pierce parameter which is proportional to the peak electron number density to the one-third divided by the resonant energy. This set of laws provide the best possible performance of an FEL once you have N-peak and gamma R. These laws are valid for, although in this ideal 1D theoretical case, for a uniform beam, that is typically the SASE case. But you can apply the same model, even though with some limitations, also to the case in which the electron beam is pre-bunched, that is the case relevant for seeded schemes, provided one considers the later exponential part of the process. If the energy spread and the emittance are included in this simple theoretical model, the FEL performance is generally degraded. This means that the output power becomes generally lower, and the gain length becomes longer. A first concern about the energy spread is related to the gain line width. Indeed, in order to have an effective energy exchange between the electron beam and the optical wave, the total energy spread of the electron beam must be smaller than 1 over the number of undulators period in the first quadratic part, the low-gain part of the process, and less than rho in the high-gain exponential regime. In the case of a seeded scheme, the total electron beam energy spread is generally given by the quadratic sum of the initial incoherent energy spread, sigma gamma, and of the energy modulation, delta gamma, which is imposed to the electron beam during the first part of the FEL process due to interaction with the seed. Now, since for effective harmonic generation, in general, delta gamma must be larger than sigma gamma times the harmonic number, capital N, putting together all these considerations, one may conclude that a good electron beam well suited for seeded harmonic generation must be characterized by a value of sigma gamma, the initial incoherent energy spread, as low as possible. However, a too low energy spread, initial energy spread, is generally responsible for a quick start of the SASE process in the unseeded portions of the electron beam. And this, as Bill Foley will show in his talk, leads to basically to spoil the final expected frequency resolution. So a kind of trade-off, this is a first important point, a kind of trade-off has to be found for the initial value of the energy spread. And a good knob that one can use in order to find the right value of sigma gamma is, for example, a laser heater placed somewhere in the LINAC where the electron beam is prepared. A simple way to include the effects of emittance, the effect of 3D effects in this simple, very simple picture is to write the Pierce parameter in terms of the electron beam peak current. This making use of the expression for the radius of the electron beam, assuming that the electron beam is focused, is matched to a linear transverse focusing. So looking at this relation, where epsilon n is normalized energy spread and beta is the twist function of the focusing channel, it is clear that a large emittance affects in a negative way the interaction coupling, because large emittance means small Pierce parameter, and small Pierce parameter means weak electron beam wave coupling. The condition to be fulfilled for the emittance in order to produce at the end of the device a light which is close to the to the fraction limit is given by this expression. This very well known. The emittance must be smaller than the optical wavelength. And this, of course, becomes quite difficult to achieve when the wavelength becomes shorter and shorter. About focusing, again, looking at this expression, one may conclude that a good way to enhance the coupling between the electron beam and the optical wave would be to increase the focusing. Increase the focusing means decrease the beta function so that the rho parameter is increased. However, taking into account in a proper way 3D effects, such as the wave diffraction and the betatron motion of the electron beam, as it has been done in this 3D simulation for the forgerless free electron laser, one may see that if the electron beam is focused too strongly, the beam radius becomes so small that the radiation diffracts too quickly out of the electron beam and no significant gain can take place. So again, as in the case of the incoherent energy spread, a kind of trade-off has to be found for the focusing. This is not very difficult. What is difficult is the next step, because once you have a good focusing, it is quite challenging to maintain a good transverse overlap between the electron beam and the optical wave over the whole propagation length. Indeed, if the RMS wandering of the electron beam during the propagation inside the undulator becomes approaches the radius of the transverse field mode, it is clear that the gain is decreased and the electron beam and the optical wave will effectively decouple. So since the typical radius for an electron beam which is used for seeded harmonic schemes aiming at generating light in the UV X-ray spectral region can be of the order of tens of microns, really state-of-the-art technology is required in order to maintain a good overlap over tens of meters of propagations. Now, these are basic requirements. Basic requirements which are generally not enough for ensuring the validity of the quite strong statement we began with, statement according to which the output properties at the harmonic wavelength must be a map of the characteristics of the seeding signal. Indeed, these local quantities, energy spread and emittance, do not tell basically anything about the fundamental features the FEL output is supposed to inherit from the seeding signal. That is, basically, longitudinal coherence and shot-to-shot reproducibility. These crucial characteristics, which really make the difference between seeded and unseeded schemes, rely indeed on more advanced requirements, such as a good control of the longitudinal electron beam distributions, which means, as we will see in a moment, a flat phase space and a uniform current and energy spread distributions at the end of the LINAC, this at the entrance of the undulator, a low jitter of the input parameters, that is, for example, a low jitter of the mean electron beam energy, a low jitter of the beam current, the energy spread, and the emittance, and of course, a very good stability from shot to shot of the seeding signal, and last but not least, as we will see, a low seed bunch temporal jitter. Now, about phase space homogeneity, the presence of a chirp in the energy versus time distribution at the exit of the LINAC, that is at the entrance of the undulator, indeed spoils the bunching process. And this is again one of the topics of Bill Foley's talk. You will see that this leads eventually to an increase of the expected output bandwidth. This first case is a non-optimized case for the case of Fermi, and while below you have a case in which the same electron-beam phase space has been optimized. This means that there is, as you can see, a quite long part of the electron beam which is flat in energy. And what is the advantage of this big effort can be seen looking at the correlated spectra. You see that there is a noticeable decrease of the expected output bandwidth. Now, how difficult, how challenging is to get this improvement from here to here will be one of the topics of Simone Dimitri's talk next Thursday. What I want to stress here is that, as Simone will show, one of the knobs you have to use in order to get from here to here relies on longitudinal wake fields which are generated by the Fermi normal conducting LINAC cavities. As we have seen in the previous talk, in the case of BESSY, where the design is based on a superconducting LINAC, it is quite, and where longitudinal wake fields do not play any role, it is quite difficult to get at the end of the LINAC flat distributions. And this, as we will see in a moment, may create some problems. What about uniformity of current and energy spread profiles? This becomes important when one considers that there is always a residual timing jitter between the electron beam and the seed pulse at the entrance of the modulator, that is, at the entrance of the undulator where the beam interacts with the seed. Indeed, due to this timing jitter between the seed and the electron beam, it's clear that different portions of the electron beam will be seeded from shot to shot. And it's also clear that if these different portions of the electron beam are characterized by different values of the current and of the energy spread, this will eventually result in a fluctuation of the output FEL properties. Of course, one simple way to overcome this problem would be to use a quite long seed covering the whole bunch. But of course, this would just trade the time fluctuation, the timing fluctuation between the electron beam and the seed pulse at the entrance of the undulator in a fluctuation of the FEL arrival time on the sample for the experiment. And this basically preventing any possibility of pump probe experiments. So again, this is a non-optimized case for the Fermi free electron laser, while here you see what you can get after a careful optimization which starts in the gun. This is something that also that in the Simone we'll talk about that. The optimization, of course, you need a very good control of the LINAC dynamics, but also in the GAN, it's really very important to start in the right way. And this is for I left that, of course, no time for me to go into details. So since Bill Foley will concentrate on the problem of coherence, I want to say a few words about the problem of shot-to-shot reproducibility. This table shows the expected bunch variations for the case of Fermi and for the case of BESSY, as obtained in both cases by means of a quite extensive campaign of start-to-end simulations. For the BESSY case, you see that there are two sets of values which are shown. The first set, which is reported in the central column of the table, has been obtained by means of time-dependent start-to-end simulations, including the jitter in the photocathode laser, jitter in the GAN and LINAC cavities, basically the possible errors you can imagine. And comparing this set of values in the central column with the corresponding values for the Fermi case, you can appreciate what is one of the main advantages of using, at least in principle, of using a superconducting LINAC, as in the Bessie case, versus what you can get using a normal conducting device. And especially, you focus, please, on the problem, on the expected fluctuation of the mean energy. There is a factor 5, which is a lot, as I will explain in a moment. And also the time offset. Time offset is the jitter of the beam arrival time at the exit of the LINAC, that is at the entrance of the undulator. It's a factor almost 2, which is a lot. But as we have seen, if you use a superconducting device, you don't have this knob of longitudinal wake fields to exploit, and it is quite difficult to make to get flat beam distributions. This third coulomb for the Bessie case on the right shows the expected bunch variation due to just this 75 femtosecond jitter of the beam arrival time. In other words, you have jitter of the electron beam, which is seeding different of the seed with respect to the electron beam. The seed is exploring different portions of the electron beam. These different portions are not flat, are not characterized by the same local values, and so you can get in trouble. You see that for the Bessie case, this is the dominant effect. So, of course, this is open for discussion. I mean, this comparison between normal conducting and superconducting LINAC, for preparing a good electron beam for this kind of process. Anticipating one of the main conclusions one can draw from the analysis I'm going to show, and it's important to remark that here, looking at this table, the most limiting factor for achieving a good output stability is given by the fluctuation of the mean energy. For the Fermi case, this 0.1% is really a problem. Now, as I said, let me concentrate for a moment on the case of Fermi, but I hope that this is really will considered as a paradigmatic case. It's not just Fermi. Fermi operated at 40 nanometers using these nominal values. So we have performed, Enrico Allaria did that, a quite extensive campaign of start-to-end simulations from the GAN to the exit of the last undulator. So I'm concentrating on one single cascade. Fermi is based on cascade principle. This is just one single cascade. And here you have a sample of this quite extensive campaign of simulations. Here you have the energy a sample of energy distributions at the exit of the LINAC, including also the timing jitter. And here you have the statistics. As anticipated, we expect something like 0.1% of fluctuation of the mean value. And here you have the same for the current. So we use these distributions as an input for our FEL time-dependent simulations using both Genesis and Ginger, and we got something like that. This is a Ginger result. Here you have the temporal profiles, and here you have the spectra for these 100 jittered distributions. So what I want to focus on, because I like problems instead of things that go too well, is this expected, quite high expected value of the jitter in photon number per pulse, more than 20%. And this is maybe not the best case you can imagine, but I mean, we spent some efforts in optimization. The good news, I'll come back on that. The good news is that the expected jitter of the central wavelength is well inside, as you can see, the average bandwidth, and that the combination of the average pulse width and of the average bandwidth gives a result which is quite close to the Fourier limit. Now, let me just spend other few words on this point. This 23% may seem a bit in contrast with what's that? With results, the only experimental result we can use presently for benchmarking simulations, the result obtained in Brookhaven. You know that in Brookhaven, a very good stability of the output power for the harmonic generation has been reported. Fluctuations of only 7%. So this may seem a bit in contrast, and it is a bit in contrast with what I showed. A simple explanation I discussed with Liwa about that could be the fact that these results have been obtained at quite long wavelengths, 240 nanometers. Quite long wavelengths means a large energy acceptance. A large energy acceptance means, of course, less sensitivity to energy fluctuation. And energy fluctuation is the most sensitive parameter for achieving this stability. So time is finished. One of the aims of my talk was also to open the way to other talks during this conference that will concentrate on problems which are related to these challenges of seeded schemes. What I want to remark here before finishing is that, as we have seen, there are two different sets of requirements you have to satisfy in order to be able to transfer the good, high-quality characteristics of your seeding signal into the FEL pulse. So the first set of requirements, these green requirements, are basic requirements. Basic means that I don't see any difference between seeded and unseeded schemes in this respect. What is really the challenge for this kind of devices is contained in these red lines. Because these red lines, these red requirements, affect what is the difference between seeded and unseeded schemes, that is longitudinal coherence and shot-to-shot stability. Thanks.
Thank you for your presentation. This paper is open to questions and comments. Okay, it seems you were very clear, Giovanni. Seems you were very clear.
It was too clear.
Okay, if there are no questions, then let's thank the speaker again.